Fort Madison has held, this will be the fourth time you've attempted to be able to borrow money to build a new elementary school. Why is it that the board and the district keep pushing for this new school?
The Fort Madison Community School District Board has done an intensive study on what are the successes we're having in our district and what are the challenges or barriers to continuing that success. So we have had over the last 3 years an excellent improvement in our academics. Our ACT scores have risen. The recent release of the Iowa assessments showed that the Fort Madison Community School District met or exceeded all of the state standards that have been identified, not only by the state of Iowa, but by the Every Student Succeeds Act, the federal act for student achievement. So those are some of our successes that we've been building on for the last 3 years. But at the same time, you have to look at what are the barriers to continuing that improvement. And what the board has identified as a major barrier to continue that improvement is the state of the facilities for our elementary school students. Richardson Elementary School is over 80 years old. Lincoln Elementary School is over 100 years old. And actually, that's opposite. Let me correct myself. Lincoln is 80 years old, and Richardson is over 100 years old. The challenges of those facilities with safety, security, instructional spaces really hinder what we need to be doing for kids, how kids need to learn, how they learn best, how we need to teach them and reach them, handicap accessibility.
Let's go into a few, kind of get into the specifics of these actual buildings. When it comes to these two, and it might be a basic question to start off with, is there air conditioning in these buildings?
No. There are a few classrooms that have window unit air conditioning because of the needs of some of our special education students. We are unable to do that in any of our other classrooms or even centrally air those buildings because of the wattage, ampage, and the constraints of those buildings that are 80 to 100 years old. It would be financially irresponsible for us to even go down that road and consider that. We are liable to current building codes, but we have been grandfathered in to old building codes to these buildings. As soon as we started to try to do some renovation, all of those grandfather codes would expire, and the cost to upgrade those buildings to current codes would be exorbitantly expensive.
What does that do for young, especially the youngest of students, when they're dealing with, we're in the Midwest here. I mean, by the time, but when school starts and at the end of the year, we could be having triple digit weather with heat indexes. What does that do to the learning of the youngest students?
What I can tell you is for the past 3 years since I've been here, we've tracked the loss of instructional time that we have had to endure because of the weather. We had, for example, this year, we had 5 days within the first 3 weeks of school that we had to release for heat issues. And what I mean by that is if it is anywhere between 90 degrees or above outside or in the community, our classrooms in our elementary buildings will reach between 100 and 110 degrees. That is unsafe for students to be in that kind of environment. When that happens, I have to dismiss the district early to lose instructional time. What happens is that affects all of our students. Because of our large footprint of our community, I can't just dismiss our elementary students. I have to dismiss our middle school students. Those are grades 4 through 8. Those are 700 students that have air conditioning in their building. I have to dismiss over 600 students at the high school, where 85% of that building is air conditioned. But everybody has to be sent home to lose instructional time because of the facility, because of the facilities at our elementary level.
When it comes to the actual classroom education, are there types of technology, are there types of services that you can't offer in these two buildings that you could in a new building, just given the structure of them, that you mentioned not being handicap accessible? Are there things that you can't offer here that you could in a building that is more accessible, more newer, more better wiring, better computer, stuff like that?
Yeah, so I'll give you two examples. One is the training that our students have gone through as far as how they're supposed to be learning and practicing their learning in a collaborative environment and team environment. 100% of our teachers have been trained in this national model of how students learn best and how we're supposed to be offering student achievement and how we're supposed to be doing teaching and learning. We can't do that in our classrooms. So as an example, we have multi-story buildings in Lincoln and Richardson. we have grade levels that are on opposite ends of the building. So, for example, we might have 2 second-grade classrooms on the third floor and 2 second-grade classrooms on the first floor just because of logistics. Those classrooms cannot collaborate together and work together for the best needs of all of the second graders because of those buildings. We have students that are physically unable to access anything other than the first floor. So we have actually had to move entire classrooms to different areas of the building because our physically unable students cannot reach some of those learning areas. So that puts a very big barrier up for what we know we need to be doing. In the area of technology, our district is a one-to-one technology district. What that means is every student has access to either a tablet or a Chromebook whenever they need it, and sometimes that is the teaching tool that is being used. What happens is connectivity is an issue. We have teachers that have to change lesson plans, change teaching styles, change content right in the middle of a lesson because the connectivity for our computers is not there. There aren't enough electrical outlets. If we have computers that are not fully charged, they can't maintain their charge because there aren't enough outlets to plug in. We had our construction manager recently present to our Rotary Club here in town that there are more stairs in Richardson Elementary School than there are electrical outlets.
The board has felt the solution is a new school. And before we get into kind of some of the details about the vote, the district wants to build a new school. Does it have a full design? Like, is the school that you want to build next to the middle school, is that a full design right now, or is it still a concept?
At this point, it's a concept. It would be financially irresponsible for the board to have commissioned an architect to do a complete full set of designs without the community having approved that this is the step that they would like us to take. So we have enlisted the help of an architect company and a construction management company to simply give us some ideas of what is possible out on that site. If the bond passes, then full sets of drawings, just like if you were to build a model home, full sets of drawings would be completed. At that time, then all of those drawings would be put out to bid for construction companies, and construction companies and subcontractors, all of that would be determined after the bond passes. At this point, the board is working with an architect for schematic designs and working with a construction manager to help manage the architect and manage the project. Once the bond is approved, then that opens up the doors for construction companies, not only in Fort Madison, but also in the tri-state area and even beyond, to publicly bid on documents to work on the construction project.
And we'll get into that part of it in a little bit here, too. But is there a general idea or general concept of some of what the district would see in that school, be it kind of classrooms in the same areas, what are some of those general things that, while we don't have specifics, we feel this is what would be included in this new school?
Absolutely. The first thing that when we had a community meeting about a year ago, we had community members come in and talk to us about what their vision was for a new elementary school. The community was adamant that this new elementary school needed to be a single-story school. This would not be a school that had a multi-story look to it. Our community meeting on the beginning of February confirmed that. We wanted to make sure that that was still the feel of the community, that it would be a one-story school. So we know that for a fact that this will be a one-story school. We also know that there would be learning areas that are defined for grade levels to be able to work together, for ease of movement between classes, ease of movement for students. We want a bright, colorful building. We want lots of natural light. We want it to be climate controlled. We want it to be safe and secure. We want to make sure that when we have visitors that come to the building, it's a controlled entrance so that parents and visitors come in and the only place that they can get into that building is directly into the office to be cleared to move on to another area of the building. Other features are we have a gymnasium cafeteria that's a multi-use area in both of our buildings. We are unable to do what we want to do in gross motor movement, in PE, and giving our students adequate time for lunch because those spaces are shared. So we would have a commons area that would have the ability to serve our students lunch. We'd have a designated competition-sized gymnasium at this building where then we would have more opportunities for gross motor skills, PE skills, as well as for our athletic teams to be able to have another space within the community to increase the opportunities for our students.
We've been talking about the building, the kind of the concept, but let's get into the actual vote that's going to be coming up on April 2nd. When this was first proposed in late 2016 and voters went to the polls, it was a $27 million bond for a school and athletic fields. Today, we're at $30 million for just the school and traffic. Can you kind of explain, first off, when it comes to that number from 27 to 30, can you just explain where that additional $3 million number comes from?
Absolutely. So when you take a look at the initial proposal, as you said, was for an elementary school and athletic facilities at $27 million, that was back in 2016. We are now 3 years later, and we're in 2019, and construction costs have increased. What you can look at in studies is that construction costs increase at about 4% per year. So not only the materials costs, but also labor costs, as well as services that are consulting with you also increase. When we came to this final vote, as I mentioned, we had a community meeting back on February, at the beginning of February, and we were talking to the community about how do you feel about that question? How do you feel about an elementary school and athletic fields? Because what we realized is that for this fourth vote, we have actually worked with a different architect company that we have been in the past. And what they discovered, as well as our construction management company, which we didn't have before either, we had brought in some expertise to kind of to work with the board and to give them some additional set of eyes. What they realized was in the first three bond vote recommendations, there was not enough attention paid to accessing and leaving the site. And so what was determined was we needed to add additional dollars to the project to make sure that car traffic had an adequate access to the site, making sure that our middle school continued to have adequate access to their site, keeping bus traffic and car traffic separate. So what ended up happening was that was going to add costs to the project. So what was determined at the community meeting was this is what was said at the meeting, board, you need to prioritize. If the priority is the elementary school, then that's the question that needs to be asked. And if you are telling us that there are inadequate plans for access to the site for cars and for buses, then you need to put that into the project and you need to take the athletic fields and pause on the athletic fields. So with just construction costs and increases over the last 3 years, removing the athletic fields but adding in the costs for traffic and safety brought that price tag to the $30 million.
And so that's what I was going to say, because the last vote last year was $30 million with the fields, but really the traffic and just another uptick in construction is where we're still at that number.
That's correct.
You've mentioned it a couple of times. The district decided the first three votes were with a different architectural firm, and the board chose a new firm for this vote. Why did the district decide to go with a different architectural firm this fourth time around?
There had been a strong relationship built with the original architect company, and we feel that they got us to a certain point. But we felt since we were going to go for a fourth and a final time that we needed just another perspective. What was another perspective going to look like? We also talked with community members and said that they felt what we were missing was the expertise and advice of a construction management company. So what the board elected to do was to enlist the services of a construction management company, which they have done. And then the construction management company brought in architect companies that they have worked with in the past that have had successful designs and also have had some successful advice on running a bond campaign. So the bond subcommittee reviewed all of the proposals from the architect companies. They utilized a rubric, just like they did when they selected a construction management company. There were public proposals at a public board meeting. There was a rubric that was used to rate all of the services that we were looking for. And the new construction company, the new architect company, CMBA, was able to show us some success in just having another look at the site, having another look at the building, and understanding what we need to do to help educate our community and let them know what information was available.
The hiring of the construction management firm, Carly Nelson, out of the Burlington area, has drawn some concerns, especially of late, questioning the fact of going with an out-of-town firm versus having a local firm serve as that construction manager, something that you haven't had in the past. Is the district confident in the process that it took in selecting that construction firm? Looking back, do you feel that process was the right way, and you got the best result out of it?
When the board was considering hiring a construction management company, there were two different ways that they could have gone about it. Because it's considered by school board regulations at the state of Iowa level to be consultation services, the board could have simply chosen a construction management company.
Just used an
RFP, a request for proposal. Could have just done a simple RFP and been done with it and chosen a construction management company based on that. What the board elected to do was to be as open and transparent and public about the selection that they really did not have to do. So what they did was solicited information from construction management companies and had those construction management companies come in and present at a public board meeting. And those companies were rated on a rubric, as I mentioned before. It was all very public. It was all standardized based on a rubric. And that is why the board feels very confident in the selection of Carly Nelson as the construction management company, because they went through a very fair and strategic process rather than just selecting one as without using all that information in that structured approach.
You mentioned it early on. Does this mean that Carly Nelson will build the school? Does this mean that they will be the actual construction firm, or will they oversee another company building the school if the bond is approved?
If the bond is approved, Carly Nelson will not be the construction company. Carly Nelson will not build the school. Carly Nelson will not bid on any construction processes of the school. Carly Nelson was hired as just a construction management firm. They are overseeing the process of the construction. They will not bid on any of the building pieces. That will be open to any construction company that wishes to apply and respond to the request for proposals once the building is designed. So I think that's also caused some confusion as to what is the role of Carly Nelson. Their role is to oversee and advise, not to build.
I was speaking with Tim Wandra a couple of months ago regarding the vote, and one of the biggest things, kind of moving away from the construction side and more to the financial side of things, he said that there was a dramatic drop in what the property tax would be for residents if this bond passed. Can you kind of explain what that impact would be, maybe from the last bond that was proposed to this one? Because we're still talking $30 million, but according to Tim, when we spoke, it is a much different impact on an individual taxpayer.
That's correct. In previous bond requests, the $27 million and then the $30 million, our original tax impact for the project to a homeowner, what we talk about for assessed valuation, there's a difference between market value and assessed value. So if you want to sell your home, you put a sign in your front yard and you sell it for market value. That's not what you pay taxes on. You pay taxes on an assessed value, and that's about 55% of your market value. So in the past, the tax impact for the project was anywhere from 86 cents to 97 cents per 1,000 assessed valuation. Because of the time that has passed and the financial state of where the district is, as well as assessed valuations in Lee County have increased. The assessor has gone out and done new evaluations within the last 8 to 12 months. Those have increased, and our levy rates have are at a higher level. Due to those variables, the actual tax impact for the bond has been reduced from 97 cents per 1,000 assessed value to 16 cents per 1,000 value. So on our, if you go to our school district website, there is bond information that you can click on. You can actually put the assessed value of your home in our bond calculator, and it will tell you what your taxable value is. And then it will tell you what your annual tax increase will actually be for this bond. So as an example, if your home is assessed at $100,000, not market value, not that's assessed. So,
and that's the standard that it seems a lot of people use, is that home with the assessment of $100,000. What are we looking at?
Right. So for a home that's assessed at $100,000, the annual tax increase to your tax bill over and above what you paid last year would be $8.33 per year.
And it was probably looking, if we're talking from about 80 some to a 16 cent, we're probably talking about 40. So we're probably talking about a 20 per, or an 80% cut, and that's just due to the assisted valuation. And so it, does it have to do in part with the district receiving funding from the fertilizer plant? I mean, that's something that we know the county talked about that a lot with the pilot payment in lieu of taxes. Is that benefiting the district when it comes to these numbers?
Yes, that has benefiting the district. So the fertilizer plant, the pipeline, the increased assessed evaluations of homes within Lee County, that is all, those have all been changes that have put the district in a more positive financial position to allow us to be able to decrease the tax impact for the bond referendum.
Has the district's approach, the school board's approach, when it comes to actually getting information out about, have you changed this time compared to the three previous? What have you learned from the three previous times that you're putting into effect this time?
One of the things that we learned is what should we continue to do? So what we have continued to do is really push early voting and absentee ballot voting. Depending on the time of the year of the vote, some people aren't in town. When we did one in summer, a lot of people were gone. We have put into place satellite polling opportunities. We had a satellite polling at our high school last Friday. This Friday, there's a satellite polling at Fort Madison Community Hospital. We also learned something to do differently is we had some lines at our polling places on voting day. So in order to help alleviate those lines, two things are being done. One is we increased the voter hours. So voting will be open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Last time it was noon until 8 p.m. So we have increased voter hours. And we've had some very productive conversations with the auditor's office. The Fort Madison Library seems to be a place that a lot of people need to vote. And so there will be some increased poll workers and increased places within the Fort Madison Library to be able to vote. As far as communication, we really have been pushing even harder on our social media. We have a separate bond website that's very easy to get to, has a lot of information. We've been keeping up with comments as best we can and questions as best we can, both on when we've had questions come up in the media, as well as on our district Facebook page. We have some signs out in the Fort Madison Community School District area. So we're really just trying to be more responsive as best we can to questions that people have in order to make an informed decision.
You had, and you mentioned it early on, there was a public forum to just to gain input and say, are we going in the right direction? Do we need to change the question? Did anyone just flat out say, this is why I have voted no? I mean, have you heard people come up and say, you know what? No matter what you do, I'm voting no because of this. Have you heard specific reasons for that? And if so, how have you tried to address them?
Well, what you want to do is respect people's opinions and respect the right that they have to cast their vote via yes or via no. What we have tried to do is listen to why people have said that they want to vote no. Most of what we have heard when we've had one-on-one conversations with people that have interacted with us is we've asked them, you know, what is the reason that you voted no? And a majority of time it's been I didn't know about this. I didn't understand that this is what this particular answer was. I didn't understand why you were asking the question this particular way. So in that vein, we've been trying to reach out to people to say, please tell us what more information we can get for you so that you can make a more informed decision rather than voting no because you didn't know or you didn't understand. There are individuals out there that do not want any impact on their taxes. So regardless of what the project is, they really don't want to see an increase in their taxes. And because we've done the best that we can to reduce it as much as possible, we really don't have any way to solve that issue. We've gotten it as manageable, we feel, as we possibly can financially. So there are people that might not believe in the project. There are people that don't want to see an increase in their taxes at all, regardless of the amount. What we're hoping is that people do see the value of building a new elementary school from not only for the youngest learners in our district, but for the future of the Fort Madison Community School District, as well as the future of the community in general for economic development, economic growth. We have had many, many people contact us from business and industry telling us that when they have tried to recruit new employees to their facilities, they want to know about the school system. And many times the feedback that we have heard is that they're impressed with our academic achievements, but they don't feel comfortable sending their students to buildings that are that old and that aged.
What do you think is the biggest misconception that people have? We're 1 week out. We've had more than 500 people have already cast an early ballot, but expecting several thousand more will on Election Day. What do you think is the biggest misconception that you hope to clarify or even just kind of try to address in these coming last few days?
I think some of the misconceptions are what some people feel are still unknown. We have people that are wondering, well, if the new school is built, what will happen to Lincoln and what will happen to Richardson? And that is a very valid question. We have not solicited any feedback on what should happen with those buildings because we feel that that would be premature to try to engage with either a builder or the city or something along those lines because we don't know if that's even going to be a viable option. What we do look at when we talk to people about the future of Lincoln and Richardson when we pass the bond referendum is take a look at what happened to the old middle school. There was a builder that came in and turned those into apartments, which were so needed for housing development and housing needs in Fort Madison, that could be a very viable option for both Lincoln and Richardson. So there has been a success of what happens to older facilities when they come offline, and that would be in the district's best interest to be very aggressive about seeking out opportunities for those buildings to be repurposed. So that's probably a big question is what happens after, what happens next. So that's I don't know if it's a misconception or something that we just can't put specifics on at this time, but I can tell you that the school district is very motivated to have those buildings repurposed in whatever way they could. I think another misconception is because we have added consultation services to this project in the forms of a construction management company, I think people might not understand the role of a construction manager because that has not been something that has been it's not been a part of projects in the past. So as I mentioned before, the construction management company is a facilitator, is an advisor, is an overseer of the entire project, coordinating between the school board, the architect company, and themselves as we run this bond campaign. When the bond passes, we'll go with the positive there. When the bond passes, the role of the construction management company will continue to be in a facilitation role. It will not be in a building role. And I think some people think that because Carl A. Nelson in this case does construction and is in that world, I think people think that will continue, that they will be they will do the construction. They will bid on all of these on all these opportunities. And that, in fact, is false. That is not true. They will coordinate with the architects to do the design of the building and advise the board. But then when it's time to bid out the construction, Carl A. Nelson will not be participating in bidding of any of those. So where people feel that because they're located in Burlington, that the money for the project would be flowing into Carly Nelson, into Burlington. That is a misconception. We don't know who will be bidding on these different things, who's going to want to do the work. RFPs will go out, and any construction company will be able to bid on the documents just like anybody else. But Carly Nelson will not be part of that process.
We've touched on the misconceptions. You've got 20 seconds to have a thought that goes into the mind of the voters as they walk up to with their ballot. What is that 20-second thought that you want them to have in their head?
I'd like them to think about Fort Madison as a community and what makes a thriving, successful community. And one of the keystones to a thriving community is a strong, viable school district. And as I've mentioned, we are academically strong, but we are struggling with our facilities. And I guess I want them to think about the pre-K through third grade students. So we have that would be students that are 4 years old to 8 years old. And if you have a four-year-old to an eight-year-old, whether it's a child, a grandchild, a nephew, a neighbor, what environment would you want for them? What would you fight for your own child to be in a learning environment? And think about the lasting impact of a new elementary school for all the 4 to 8 year olds in this community for the next 100 years.